Well, good morning. Today I have the privilege of introducing Senator Mike Ronstal. I could spend a lot of time telling you about what a great guy Mike is. He's been a mentor, a friend, and public servant. Most of us have watched his work over a number of years, decades, and respect it. But that's really not why I'm here today. Today I want to talk to you a little bit about Mike being the most targeted candidate in the United States this past election cycle in any legislature. More than $1 million was poured into his race, directed to defeat him, primarily by opponents who were upset over his views that he took on gay marriage. Mike won overwhelmingly in one of the least Democratic districts in the state, Western Iowa. So I think that speaks well for his work, as well as the respect that his constituents hold him in. What I really want to do, though, is talk a little bit about what transpired on April 3rd, 2009, when the Iowa Supreme Court affirmed Judge Hansen's ruling in Varnum versus Breen. The court determined that denying a marriage license on the basis of sexual orientation violated the Equal Protection Clause, which changed Iowa history. Same-sex marriage is now legal in Iowa. The focus turns immediately from the Supreme Court just across the street to the Iowa Capitol, and particularly the Iowa legislature. Hundreds of people stormed the Capitol, demanding the right to vote on this issue. Republicans promoted a bill they called the Leadership Bill, targeting and demanding the right to vote on this issue. Essentially, what they wanted was a constitutional amendment to deny same-sex marriage in Iowa. The Republican leader rose to the floor in the Senate and put the question to Senator Ronstal directly, asking him if he would co-sponsor a leadership bill. Following is the response from one of Iowa's most courageous leaders who stood up and changed Iowa history forever. Technology gods will help me out here. No porn or other bad things will pop up. Let's give it.
One of my daughters was in the workplace one day. Workplace at that time, there were a whole bunch of conservative older men. And those guys were talking about gay marriage. They were talking about discussions going on across the country. And my daughter Kate, after listening to it for about 20 minutes, said to them, "You guys don't understand. You've already lost. My generation doesn't care." I think I learned something from my daughter that day when she said that. And I've talked with other people about it, and that's what I see, Senator McKinley. I see a bunch of people that really want to profess their love for each other and want state law to recognize that. Is that so wrong? I don't think that's so wrong. As a matter of fact, last Friday night, I hugged my wife. You know I've been married for 37 years. I hugged my wife. I felt like our love was just a little more meaningful last Friday night, because thousands of other Iowa citizens could hug each other and have the state recognize their love for each other. No, Senator McKinley, this is for me.
If you join me in recognizing Senator Ronstal for his efforts.
Nobody said I was a remarkably attractive young man. Didn't hear that. And by the way, I was commenting to Matt over breakfast here. Show him your hair, Matt. Look. You know, I had cataract surgery in August of this year, as if I needed more things going on in my life. So I had cataract surgery on my eyes, and what I discovered is cataract surgery causes grayness in your hair. Because it, you know, when I couldn't see very well, it was just kind of generally brown, right? And that's all I saw was the general brown. I'm sorry, Matt, but you're getting on the side of it's the generally gray. So I certainly did not expect it. You know, when I was going to come here today and I was going to talk about, and I'll still talk about it briefly. I was going to talk about this next session of the legislature and what we are working on, what we think we can do in the state of Iowa in terms of growing our economy. You know, you hear about creating jobs in this state, and one of the things we find out is that we're not short of workers in this state. We're short of skills in this state. We've got actually quite a few workers in this state that don't have jobs, but they don't have the skills for the kinds of jobs that are available out there. And so so this session of the legislature, Democrats and the Senate are going to kind of focus on that. And we actually think Iowa's in a great position. We've got a pretty healthy state economy overall. There's still too many people out of work, but a pretty healthy state economy, which means we got some resources in the state treasury. And we think it's time for Iowa to step up our game as it relates to training workers in this state. So we're going to focus on that, and we've been going around the state having meetings at community colleges, and we're engaging local school districts. And I got to tell you, I've heard some really interesting things. You know, we're short of skilled workers in the area of building trades. And one of the things I heard about in the Sioux City School District, they have something they call Diva University. And Diva University is for girls, high school girls, to get exposed to construction trades and think about whether they want that for a career. And they are significantly increasing the number of young women that are deciding, hey, there's a real future. I don't just have to be a nurse or a teacher. I could be an electrician and maybe make a little more than a nurse or a teacher. So you hear things like that. You also hear things. We have the Georgetown University did a study on Iowa saying we're going to create about 500,000 jobs in the next 6 years in the state of Iowa. And of that 500,000 jobs, 60% of them will require more than a high school diploma and less than a college degree. And we don't meet those needs very well. I also met a man in another part of the state that had a degree in interior design. He was from the East Coast, a degree in interior design. He couldn't find any job on the East Coast, and he came to Iowa. He couldn't find any job here. And the morning I met him, he had just gotten a phone call because a 1-month-long program to get a commercial driver's license. And this man today is putting food on the table for his family, no longer in a minimum wage job. There are lots of opportunities to put Iowans back to work, but it's going to take a real effort of local schools, of local K-12 schools, of community colleges, of adult basic education. We have thousands of people in the state of Iowa that don't have a GED. That's basically your ticket to get any real job in the state of Iowa. At a minimum, you got to start with a high school diploma or a GED. So there's a whole host of things and a whole bunch of places we can make some investments to better prepare our workforce for the jobs that are out there. So I'm really excited about all that, and that's kind of what I wanted to talk about with you guys today was those issues, because the issues that are important to you, I have some pretty high confidence we turned a corner in November of this year. Several states affirmed marriage at the ballot box. We once again made sure that that there's a majority in the Iowa Senate. By the way, my leadership elections don't go quite as smoothly as you do, as yours here. I would say the first time I was elected the Democratic leader, they have this arcane stuff in politics where the caucus takes a vote and they go off and quietly count the ballots for the leader. And this was back in '96, and when I became the Democratic leader, and so they go back and they count the ballots, and they come back and they say, whoever the new leader is, or whoever the leader is, whether it's the new one or the old one. I always say on the most, and then we go through this process where usually the person that has lost makes the motion to cast a unanimous ballot, to basically say the whole caucus is going to support this new leader even though that person may have lost. So makes the motion to cast a unanimous ballot. That motion passed on an 11-10 vote. So your leadership elections were perhaps a little more smooth than that. But the real issue for Iowa is how we grow our economy. And I think that's going to be what our focus is on. We have a host of issues. Senator McCoy certainly knows a bunch of them that'll be coming up in commerce. He also deals with infrastructure. He's a valued member of our caucus, an important member, and we're also going to try and get him to mentor some of the new people we have coming into our caucus. So I'm very excited about this next session of the legislature because we're not going to focus on your issues. We're not going to focus on those. We're going to focus on the things that will help grow Iowa's economy. So I'm very excited about that. It was a challenging election, and Matt, under the light, you can still see the calluses on my knuckles. I knocked on 13,000 doors this spring, summer, and fall. When I did that plan on the floor of the Senate, a few of the Republicans, in the blogosphere, started making reference to, this is recorded, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it is recorded. So, my daughter Kate. Some Republicans in the blogosphere referred to my gay daughter, thinking she was gay, and that's why she had said this, misunderstood. But she said to me, "Well, if I'm gay, I'm really bad at it because I've never had sex with a woman." And she was 33 at the time, 32 at the time. So I said, "Dad, right?" So I said, "So Kate, are you telling me you've had sex with a guy?" So she did not, and that ended that conversation. I used to have trouble winning arguments with Kate once she became 13 or 14, and it got to the point where I would start to lose arguments with her, my only escape from that, because she's a very, very bright kid, my only escape from that was to figure out some way out of the argument before she won it. So what I would do is I would kind of look at, the deck stacked against me, my argument's starting to crumble, and I would look at her and I'd kind of tilt my head a little bit to the side, and I'd say, "Did you do that to your hair deliberately?" I wouldn't win the argument, but I'd end it before I lost the argument when I did that, because she'd be off to the bathroom to look at her hair. I almost don't know what to say, because I really wasn't expecting your kind introduction, Senator McCoy. Thank you for that. Thank you for thank you for loving. That's really what all of this is about. So again, I'm a little bit speechless. I'm taken off my game because I really wasn't expecting this, and because I'm really quite happy that I think we've made great strides. I think we did turn that corner on this election. I won with a stronger majority than I've had in many years. I did have fun during the campaign, you know. Certainly there are a few people that knew me based on what others had told them about me, you know. So, and this one house in particular in Carter Lake, Iowa, this woman sees me coming down the street, you know, and she comes running out as I get to her sidewalk and start to go up. She comes running out to stop me and says, I don't want your literature. I don't want you here. And get off my property. And she's trying to keep me away. I don't know why. Maybe I'll convert her or something. Who knows? But she's very, you know, she's very insistent that So as I turn to leave, she says, we're Christians. And I said, so am I. And that kind of frustrates her, and she's a little bit flustered with that. And I don't care. I want you off my property. And so I say, I start to turn around, start to leave, and I say, okay. And then I said, I'll pray for you. She says, well, I'll pray for you too. So it was really kind of an interesting campaign. There were a few people that would bring that issue up to me at the door, but I got to tell you, it was remarkably few. Out of 13,000 doors, I don't think 10 people brought it up to me at the door. Okay, so it's remarkably few that think this is an issue anymore in our society. So and in a very marginal district, my district is 37th out of 50 Senate districts. Mine, in terms of Democratic performance, is 37th. And it's, you know, at its worst, it was 41st in Democratic performance. I've kind of been on borrowed time since I was first elected back in 1982. So I was bound and determined. One of the reasons I knocked on 13,000 doors, who knows if I needed to or not, but I always kind of felt that if I stood on somebody's front porch and talked to them, no matter what the biggest loser on election night said, we're just not even going to use his name anymore because he's that irrelevant in our state. But I did not want to lose this race for lack of working. I wanted to make sure that we stood up to that guy and to his bullying. And so I'm glad we accomplished that, and we accomplished it in broad, deep ways across the country, not just in Iowa. We re-elected a judge, we re-elected me, we re-elected a majority in the Iowa Senate, meaning this issue will not come up for another 2 years. That puts it past 2016. As you can all tell by what happened on election night, the mood on this issue has dramatically shifted. Back in 2009, I kind of knew that it would. And I would even tell you, I was a little bit nervous that once it was legal, and you know, there was that, I don't know how many days, like 27 days before they started doing weddings, before it became legal. There was that, and there was a little bit of, you know, I worried about perhaps a carnival atmosphere and people, way too flamboyant people coming into our state and kind of, you know, making it kind of a carnival atmosphere. And I worried a little bit about that. And what really happened is that summer I went to a wedding in Underwood, Iowa, 12 miles from Council Bluffs. Two women who had a 16-year-old kid that they had adopted at the age of 3 or 4 that had been living there all of those years, just outside the city limits of Underwood, Iowa, and they had a big wedding, and they invited a lot of people, and maybe a third of the people that went were what I kind of called sightseers. Gee, what's this all about? I think I'll go to this wedding and see what this is all about. And almost universally, people saw a loving couple raising an adopted kid, good members of the community. It was their friends and their neighbors. And that's really what happened. It wasn't the carnival atmosphere. It was everybody realizing their friends and neighbors, admittedly the ones with the most well-kept lawns, but right down the street from me on Bennett Avenue, there. And by the way, they moved out, and the lawn's gone to hell. So, but that's really what it was about, and it was really what I said that day. It's loving couples professing their love for each other, and I think our society's moved to the point where they're going to accept that. So I'm thrilled with that, and I'm thrilled that this session of the legislature is not going to be on those issues. This session of the legislature is going to be about growing Iowa's economy, putting Iowans back to work, getting them the skills they need to take the jobs that are available out there. And I'm excited about getting down to that work, because gay or straight, everybody can use a job. So anybody want to take questions? Yes, sir.
I'm curious to know what you see as the prospects for making some strides toward decriminalization of HIV exposure or alleged exposure. That's creating a real dilemma, because on the one hand, it would be good for the individual and society for people to be tested.
Yep.
But when they're tested, they can become infected with the knowledge that exposes them to all kinds of terrible things.
Yep. Yeah, I'd say we're certainly open to pursuing something on that subject. One of the challenges we still have, we are a majority in the Iowa Senate. By the way, I got to tell you one other thing. It is a remarkable majority. It is 26 members that are part of a team that we have all woven together, and whether it's on the campaign trail or on the policy trail or whatever, it's a remarkable group of 26 Democrats that have stuck together the last several years, worked really hard to accomplish good things. And I'm the luckiest leader in the country in terms of the caucus members I have. But that said, we are still one chamber. We still have a Republican governor. We still have a Republican House. So part of this continues to be we need to engage House members in understanding those issues in a much more in-depth way than the simplistic laws that that they passed over the last decade or so. So, yeah, I'm very open to that, but it's going to require some cooperation from the other chamber. So I strongly encourage you to relate to those folks as well. Yes, sir.
Yeah, I'm interested in what is the progress toward getting the train from Chicago to Omaha through here?
My phone, when Craig Paulson calls me on my phone, the picture that lights up is of a passenger car. Of a train that I took. I was waiting at the train one day in Council Bluffs. I was waiting at a railroad crossing, a lot of railroad crossings in Council Bluffs. I was waiting there, and this passenger train goes by, and I kind of go, okay, and I take a picture of it, and then I associated that with Craig Paulson. And by the way, when I call him, his phone goes off with a railroad whistle. Okay, they are remarkably how would you describe it, Matt?
Anti-progress.
I think that kind of says it. So I'd say broad support amongst Democrats in the Senate, very broad support. And we tried like three different times to press them in terms of legislation and in the infrastructure bill. Senator McCoy chairs the Transportation and Infrastructure Budget Subcommittee. And we tried multiple times to get them to go along with it. We managed to get them to leave open the door for the study, but beyond that, we have not been able to get them to express any willingness to consider that. I'll just stop there. I mean, they tend to think, you know, that charging stations for cars, you know, so that people that want to get electric cars can charge their cars in a tax credit to create that mechanism. Republicans don't like that because of General Motors has the Chevy Volt, and Republicans think GM stands for Government Motors. So they're a little bit laissez-faire capitalists, let's just say. So, anybody else? Yes, sir.
What do you think about the growth of entrepreneurial and small business in terms of using tax funds for incubators?
Using tax funds for what?
For incubators for small business.
I think those are great opportunities.
What's the balance between that and education? Because education is very expensive. But creating a business actually generates revenue and doesn't necessarily require a college degree. People don't have a college degree, right?
Yep.
It creates traction coming into Iowa from other parts of the country as well.
Again, the challenge of all of this is convincing a reluctant chamber on the other side to pursue these issues. Incubators for small businesses, the legislature has been engaged in that all of the years I've been in the legislature, more or less. And at our universities, we've tried to do things to commercialize research and to create business parks, so to speak, that are basically incubators for small businesses in the state. I'd say we're very open to that, and I'd say that's part of this skilled entrepreneurial efforts are part of our interest in a skilled workforce, is helping people figure out how to create a business when they've got an idea. Help them develop those business plans. Help them with shared services through through buildings and support staff. Those kinds of things. Those all make a lot of sense in terms of helping people get jobs. So I'd say we're very open to that.
Our tax receipts are put up substantially and happily. What do you see as the prime candidates for additional funding as a result of the increased tax receipts?
Let me say again, we're trying to move towards something that makes Iowa the premier state in the union when it comes to providing training. I want to look at every business, large or small, every entrepreneur, large or small, every small business, every big business, whether it's the guy that just needed that commercial driver's license so he could put food on the table for his family, whether it's the guy that adult basic education doesn't have a GED, whether it's the person that needs the skills to do building trades, whether it's the folks that climb the top of the wind turbines, climb up to maintain and service those. It's that whole range of training, whether it's the guy that Rockwell Collins needs world-class electrical engineers. It's all of those things, and I want to be able to look any business person in the eye, whether it's an individual, a small business, a large business, a CEO, and say, we are the place in this country that is prepared to train the workers that you need. That's been the function of government since our country was formed. It's about giving people the skills they need to work in the real world out there. So I think that's where we need to make a major infusion this year, is in terms of job training. And it's one of those kinds of things that businesses want. You can get all into the arguments of whether or not I should help your business, and maybe your business competes with that business. Or I can be about, I think we can get a broad, deep consensus on, well, it's about giving the skills to the individuals and letting them shop those skills to whatever business they want to go to. But it's less about picking winners and losers, and it's more about direct investment in people. And so I think that's probably the biggest area I want to focus on this session, is strengthening our worker training system in this area. We do have a lot of money. We got to be a little bit careful. We also have some fiscal challenges out there. You know, I am a banker's son. I came from a long line of Republican bankers. I was 14 years old before I knew damn Democrat was two words. But
yes. I'm not from Iowa. One of the things that confuses me about moving here, it seems like there's a wing of the Iowa Republican House that just has an ideology that's not traditionally Republican to begin with. And there's this odd sort of, things like, talking to Senator Fernbach, I've been paying for him from talking about, cutting tobacco funding, even though there's plenty of money. So we have tobacco prevention programs for sort of teenagers, and even though there's plenty of money, that being cut anyway. It's just almost like we are going, are cutting Iowa State University funding, even though there's a lot of people that, even though people are like, actually, this is not good for the future of Iowa. There seems to be this mentality, infrastructure. Again, Republicans drove the infrastructure creation, whether it be the interstate highway system or the railroads 100 years ago. That was all the Republican Party that drove that. There seems to be this just utter confusion on my part where this slash and burn, all government bad. I'm just wondering where that comes from. Because in Massachusetts, where I'm from, that's not there. There doesn't seem to be people who...
Well, in Massachusetts, there aren't actually any Republicans there.
I'm just saying, where do you even start? If there's money from a tobacco settlement that's earmarked for anti-tobacco prevention programs, and there are people who would rather have that money unspent rather than spend it on programs that are proven to, I just don't get it.
I would assure you there's not much money that's unspent. Okay, conceptually, it just isn't spent on that.
Okay.
And whenever somebody says the money's earmarked, well, kind of, until we say it isn't.
Okay.
That's the reality of that. And I'm not defending the Republicans, but to some degree, our tobacco prevention efforts have been remarkably successful in this state. We're amongst the lowest in the country in terms of smoking. That's starting to creep back up, and we're trying to make that case to Republicans, partly because we're not doing counter-advertising, those kinds of things. But I'd say that there's some level of political history where the people that sell tobacco provided significant support for Republicans, politically speaking.
And so
some of that goes back to that, but again, we've been remarkably successful, and to some degree, the Republicans are kind of saying, okay, it worked. We're down to 14-15% that smoke in the state of Iowa, and from 22% probably 6 years ago.
What are we trying to get back at? What can someone like you do in Ames, Iowa? Not so much of the tobacco issue, but just a general attitude of all government is bad. And I don't know, that's the thing that I have a hard time getting my head around. Why someone would have that viewpoint? It's not historical. It's not good for the state. It doesn't seem to make any sense.
To some degree, they buy their own rhetoric that all government is bad. And that big business can do nothing wrong, and I think we've seen lots of examples of that not being particularly true. The giant banks kind of led us into this deep recession or depression, whatever you want to call it, that we've had. But some of it's their rhetoric on that, and some of it is they can't succeed, and you see this going on in Washington, they can't succeed at making choices about here's where we think we ought to cut. So instead, they believe in, the expression is starve the beast. If we'll just contract revenues or if we'll just put a straitjacket, there are some interesting points that they want to say, we can never spend more than we take in. Never spend more than projected revenues for that year. Theoretically, that means every year that reserve fund gets a little bit bigger. It keeps growing every year. You may have a bad year and then it doesn't grow that year. But eventually you'd have the entire state budget in a savings account. By the way, we're probably at 21, maybe 22% of the state budget in savings. We're supposed to have savings of 10% of the state budget. That's state general fund budget. That's $6 billion, so that's $600 million. We've got that $600 million. We've got another probably $700 million in ending balance. We are in very good shape. There are some, anybody that thinks the federal government isn't going to have to figure out some way to contract their spending. We are going to have to deal with that. So I don't think we're in a position where we can say, oh, let's spend that $700 million more for next year, and that's not necessarily sustainable for the long term. But doing some key things in key areas that will grow our economy at a time when we're better off than most other states, and at a time when the economy is starting to come back across the country, it's very gradual and it's very fragile, but Iowa's a great place to do business and a great place to expand if we can provide companies the skilled workers they need. So that's why I keep saying, let's keep our focus on that. We'll have to do some things as it relates to Medicaid. We're gonna have some costs there that will be passed down to us over the next 5 or 6 years. So we've got to be a little bit frugal, but focusing the new spending that we're going to have on funds that will grow our economy, I think, makes a lot of sense. I don't know if you were going to be the hook or ask another. You got the sunlight behind you. I had one question here.
Okay.
So,
what is the progress? What's happening with the Affordable Care Act as regard to the insurance exchange that's supposed to be developed, et cetera?
We're struggling through that, okay? And I think we'll come up with an exchange that works. All of the rhetoric of the last several years over that issue is death squads. I hate the idea of government determining what care you're going to get. Who determines that now? You determine it? No. The corporate boardroom in the insurance company determines it now. So even though I hate government controlling what's going to be available in terms of health care, it's a heck of a lot better than the boardroom of the insurance companies. So there's a lot of this talk that has been hyperbolic. Over the top kind of stuff. The Affordable Care Act, we will cobble together, and even Branstad has figured out. I mean, they had presidential candidates saying stop and don't do this, and they said, hey, Romney was going to repeal it on day one. Not quite sure how that was going to happen. Especially, nobody predicted that the U.S. Senate was going to get 60 Republicans. Was it certainly possible at some point that the U.S. Senate would become Republican? Yeah, that was possible, but they were never going to get to 60. So it was never real. So that was all politics. That was all the politics of the moment, the politics of scaring people about that. So we will cobble together an insurance exchange. And probably the biggest key for most of us in terms of controlling health care costs is the expansion of Medicaid. Because if I don't have insurance and I keel over here clutching my chest, you guys are going to drag me over to that hospital over there, right? And they're going to treat me. They're not going to say, do you have insurance? Maybe they should. I don't think they should, but some people do think they should. They're going to treat me, and when I don't have insurance and nobody pays that bill, you guys all pay it in your insurance premiums. It's a hidden tax on every insurance policy in the state of Iowa is the uncompensated care at hospitals. So the expansion of Medicaid is probably the most important element to keep health insurance premiums low. The front page of the Register this morning, 11 or 12% increase for private insurance. That's a pretty scary world out there. And that's all because there's a whole bunch of people that get care and none of that care is reimbursed at the hospital. So I'd say more important than the exchange, which is merely a marketing mechanism for people to be able to purchase. The other provisions of the law outline the, you know, pre-existing conditions and those and the loss ratios and all of the other provisions of the law. That's not a function of the exchange. The exchange is just a marketing mechanism, and we'll cobble that together, for better or for worse. We'll cobble something together there. And even Branstad has recognized now and said, okay, we'll do it in partnership with the federal government. My guess is within a year, he'll say, we don't really want to partner with the federal government. We want to run our own. Because they'll have a lot more freedom to craft it to meet Iowa's needs. And Iowa has unique health care needs in terms of a population decentralized state. How do you deliver those services across the state of Iowa? I think people will discover it makes more sense for us to run our own exchange. But the exchange is merely a marketing mechanism. The key elements are broader coverage, and getting more people that are currently uncompensated care into a system like through the expansion of Medicaid. I do think he's got the hook now.
Yep. So. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
We really appreciate what you have done, and anything that we could give you would only be a token of that appreciation. It is our tradition to give a copy of a Des Moines Gay Men's Chorus CD, and we wish you lots of happy listening. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much again.
Thank you.
The senator's hair is turning gray, as is mine, and as is Senator McCoy's, and as is also true of a number of people here in the room. We didn't grow up when the West was wild, but we certainly grew up at a time when that genre was a very predominant in the film industry. And I recall those movies, and I recall when a particularly heinous crime was committed by someone, or there was a particularly unpopular defendant in the jail, and a mob would show up at the jail demanding that he be turned over to them for his appropriate lynching. And the hero of those movies was always the sheriff. The sheriff who stepped out in front of the jail and said, over my dead body, will you go after this person and lynch them? You are not going to do it. That's the way the movie would typically end, or perhaps with someone in the crowd saying, well, I guess I'm going to stand with the sheriff. And that break the psychology of that mob and avoid a lynching. Senator Gronstall, you have been our sheriff. And the mob was forming, and they wanted to lynch us. They wanted to put that on the ballot and appeal to that mentality to put discrimination in our sacred Constitution. And you stood out there and said, over my dead political body, will you be able to do any such thing in this great state? That bought us time. Bought us time for the reinforcements to arrive. It bought us time to educate people. And education is the enemy of bigotry and prejudice and homophobia. And with just a little more time, we're not going to have to worry about this issue ever again because of the time you bought us. And we really appreciate it. Thank you very much. Our next meeting will be February the 1st, just in advance of our wonderful Red Party fundraiser event, and I hope all of you will be here. We have a number of interesting speakers on the schedule. For February, we will have Sean Strube, who is the founder of POZ Magazine. He is also a noted filmmaker, and I will be circulating additional information about him. But he is going to come to Iowa and speak to the First Friday Breakfast Club on February the 1st. In March, Our speaker will be Greg Gross, who is with the AIDS Project of Central Iowa, to talk to you about what's going on at the project and some of the exciting things that are in its future going forward. I was out with him last evening and got a drink in him and a commitment to speak to us in March. And it only took one drink. I mean, it was really remarkable. And April is to be announced. May is Sean Faircloth, a former senator from the northeast of the United States and who is the current executive director of the Richard Dawkins Foundation for Science and Learning. That he's the executive director of that foundation, and he will be coming to Iowa to speak to the First Friday Breakfast Club in May. So we have a lot to look forward to, and I look forward to seeing you all on February the 1st. Thanks for being here.